Welcome to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show. Hosted by author, investor, hard money lender, and real estate educator, Bruce Norris. Equipping California real estate professionals for tomorrow's challenges.
Hi, thank you for joining us. My name is Bruce Norris, and today our special guest is Sean O'Toole. Sean is the founder and president of ForeclosureRadar.com, a website that's pretty much revolutionized the trustee sale buying business. Sean, welcome back. We've done this a number of times, and always glad to have you.
I'm always glad to be here.
2012, I'm just curious, you know, you track all the data. Were there any surprises at the end of 2012? You look back and go, okay, I wouldn't have expected that to happen.
We expected foreclosures to drop, but they did drop more dramatically.
And you probably were one of the few people that thought they were going to drop at all, because there's always that big glob of something that was supposed to always show up in droves that you always thought never would, and and it never did.
Many have predicted foreclosure wave after foreclosure wave that has yet to come to fruition, and we still don't see that happening, you know. And, you know, I understand why they predict it, because it probably should happen or should have happened, but we still don't expect that it will. It's a political-driven market, not a, economic fundamentals-driven market.
So at the end of the day, when you remove foreclosures from the market, does that have some reaction?
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's no question that as you know, and I think everybody listening knows, that that sudden removal of so many foreclosures has just left a lack of inventory pretty much throughout the state, even in areas, where you wouldn't expect a lack of inventory, where there should still be quite a bit of foreclosure activity. Instead, there's nothing to buy.
Well, what's interesting about that, and this, it's really come about gradually and then increased to me. I looked at the charts and say, first half of the year, it bounced along and maybe reduced by, say, 20%. And then 6 months ago, all of a sudden, it just made a beeline from 6 months down to a month in most of the counties in Southern California we pay attention to. So what were the policy decisions that drove that? And maybe even kind of to set up what we're going to discuss, how do you have a policy decision in 2013 that reverses that trend?
I think it was just a whole bunch of things coming together. The biggest thing, though, that I think really changed in 2012 was everyone realizing that yield, that's the income return from rents on real estate, was more important than price. And I think that led banks to say, wait a second, you know, maybe we're disposing some of this stuff and we shouldn't, or there's a better way to dispose of it or resolve it. And, it also brought in some major new investor players. Some of those started in 2011, but it really got underway in 2012 with large hedge funds coming in and buying up property. And I think those things kind of conspired to both reduce inventory further and also to get the banks to, you know, question their foreclosure practices and look at other alternatives, together with the policy decisions around, the Attorney General's settlement, the California Protecting Homeowners and Foreclosure, or a Homeowner Bill of Rights, I'm sorry. A lot of stuff happened in 2012, there's no question.
And it seems like, while maybe not one of those policies was responsible for a bulk of it, to kind of in unison, it's really been sort of a historic disappearance of stuff for sale. And so going forward, unless they change policies, I guess one of the things that I feel pretty comfortable with is that we will have a hard time getting from 1 month to 6 months of inventory. I don't know where that would come from.
Yeah, and, you know, for those predicting it's going to come from a foreclosure wave, just note that it takes 6+ months for that to happen, and there's no sign of it happening now.
No.
The chances of it happening in 2013 are slim to none.
Okay. And let's talk about the potential that's still there for people, let's say, in California. How many people are whatever the number days late, 90 days late or in foreclosure. You have those numbers kind of at the tip of your tongue. So what numbers that of people are in trouble and why, I guess, why will that probably not cause a problem? Because the policies are not going to allow all those be foreclosed on, maybe even period. But what are the numbers? Let's talk about that first.
Yeah, so right now, let me just pull up the latest numbers. So in foreclosure, right, we have, you know, roughly 180,000, 190,000 homes that either have a notice of default outstanding, so they're in pre-foreclosure, they're scheduled for auction, or they're bank-owned. And it's about equal, 67,000 pre-foreclosure, 66 scheduled for sale, and 62 bank-owned. You know, none of which are terribly scary numbers if we had to deal with them. You know, we sell 40, 50,000 homes a month in California, so even that is not that much not that much inventory. You know, the bigger issue, of course, is those folks that are delinquent. And I'm looking for that stat. That's not stat. That's credit data. That's not, we track public records, so I don't have that directly. But, you know, it's somewhere around 450,000. So half a million, 10 months of inventory that aren't making their payments. You know, and of course, a lot of those folks are in the process of a short sale or a loan modification. So some of those may make it into foreclosure and others won't. And of course, many have been sitting there for an awfully long time. Your biggest number, though, is still the number of folks that are underwater. But they seem to be hanging in there and continuing to make their payments. So altogether, you know, it's a quarter of homeowners with quarter of homeowners in California that are either underwater or in trouble already. So it's still a terrible housing market if you think about it from
historically,
ownership standpoint.
Well, historically, too, that's an unprecedented number, even though it's improved a ton.
Right.
A price increase, this is just something that I started playing with, a price increase of about 23% takes care of half of the underwater people.
Yeah, it does. It makes a big difference.
And it also encourages the other half to go, okay, I'm almost there and I'm about to get rewarded for hanging in there. And so I guess that's what's kind of important in 2013 to me is I think the strength of a price movement just starts solving a lot of this stuff. The shadow inventory all of a sudden becomes half equity sellers.
Well, there's no question in my mind that Ben Bernanke and the Federal Reserve agree with you and that they're trying to create an asset bubble to get out of this problem and, you know, and ultimately probably long-term inflation, although they'd never say that. Because that's the easiest way to solve the problem of too much debt when you're in control of your own currency is you devalue and the debt becomes less because you've pushed asset prices up. So I think that's absolutely the goal of, the administration and the Federal Reserve.
Do you think 2013 will be a fairly significant price movement in California?
I think I will. The one place I read your prediction of a 20% across the board increase, and my only issue with that, right, if that was about San Bernardino or Riverside, I would have zero hesitation in saying, yes, absolutely. But I don't think those dynamics are exactly the same throughout the state. So that's probably where I'd take some issue with it.
Yeah, whenever we're doing predicting, it was a discussion on median price, which is sort of an inaccurate number anyway. It's a sale in the middle, but
yeah.
So is a 20% price movement, and it'll probably include more high dollar sales than 2012. So it's a little bit of there's a fudge factor there that it makes sense that you'll end up with more move up buyers just because people are starting to have equity, but.
Well, and there's fewer, there's fewer foreclosures at the low end.
Right.
The one place where we were quick to foreclose was in the the lowest end properties. The banks seem to be foreclosed on those much more quickly than they did on the higher end properties. So, you know, having the move up in median because of that, I think, is reasonable. Having real price appreciation in areas that where payments are significantly below rents, like San Bernardino or Riverside, mm-hmm. you know, makes perfect sense. So I think it's quite possible we'll hit a 20% median increase. What I'd hate for a listener to take away, though, is that that means that their house is going to go up 20%.
Correct. They could do better. Or worse, yeah.
Or worse.
Now, I've got a question. Now, you're in Northern California, and you're familiar with maybe more pricey areas than I am. I live in Riverside, San Bernardino, epicenter of Foreclosureville, and, you know, you live in an area that has probably have, you know, a higher dollar, certainly a higher dollar median price by quite a bit. Are you seeing price firmness or acceleration in those areas?
I would say it's a mixed, it's a mixed bag. I mean, certainly on the peninsula, we still have a very strong technology market, kind of even moving beyond the social media bubble, mm-hmm. as it were. But, you know, Silicon Valley continues to be very, very strong on the employment front. Still quite a few winners there financially, putting pressure on that area. It's still, you know, world over a pretty strong economy. So, you know, I think the Bay Area is very strong. You come into the Central Valley, been an awful lot of investment buying and the rest there. Prices are still low compared to rents. Mm-hmm. So, but that's, they're catching up, and they're catching up pretty quick. And I don't know how much more room there is there. You know, so I don't expect as much appreciation in some of those areas. And, you know, you get a lot of different you know, you definitely have different pockets, and it's hard to even almost say by city. It's almost areas of cities.
I think that's always the difficulty in looking at it and predicting something, is there are so many micro markets inside of the picture. But I think what you're saying is that you feel that a lot of this price has been driven by a cap rate mentality that's about to get uninteresting. Would that be accurate?
Yeah, right, exactly. If you're pushing prices up because you're willing to take a 7% return and current market is 8 or 9, price is going to move up pretty quickly. But mm-hmm. when they get to 7, unless there's an appetite at 6 or 5, and I don't see any indication of that, they don't continue to move up.
Unless, and this is where we'll probably begin our disagreement, is that I guess I feel pretty strongly that even though this bull run has been dominated by the cash buyer and the small guy, the medium-sized guy, and the giant guy, there's, to me, a very big underlying owner-occupant crowd that was foreclosed on in 08 and 09 that is now, even if they're unemployed by 20%, still an overwhelming a number of people that will carry on the boom. If for no other reason, it saves them money monthly over rent.
But I certainly hope they're smarter than in 2004, 2005. And, you know, they might be willing to pay a little bit more than rent to have the stability of a home. But, I mean, we got in some areas down to 1%, 2% returns when you looked at price versus rent. You know, you'd be better off putting your money into treasuries. I just don't see us having the kind of boom that we saw from, you know, 2000 to 2006. I think what we're doing is, you know, we're recovering to, you know, where prices should be. And that's really where prices should be given these artificially low interest rates. So it's probably, you know, we're going to recover to a point where it makes sense given the low interest rates, but not where it probably makes sense long term. And I think that sets us up for some longer term challenges.
I completely agree with the longer term challenges and probably feel a lot more aggressively comfortable with it getting to that uncomfortable number. Just because of the unprecedented rates. You and I went back to Washington, D.C., did a little research, and we know that this interest rate has just not been seen since the 1900s, period.
Yeah. And, yeah, no, absolutely.
And, you know, and that's, I really started dwelling on that. This is an unprecedented interest rate. What unprecedented dominoes fall because of that?
And one thing, you know, on just on that note, though, while we were back there, so while on the one hand, you know, this low interest rate for purchase is certainly unprecedented, right?
Mm-hmm.
As far back as we could find. On the other hand, my thoughts about what a reasonable return on investment was, mm-hmm. on real estate, you know, we'd always heard, you know, or at least the get rich quick guys and the, you know, rent to build wealth, or, you know, folks out there, you know, have always talked about trying to get, you know, 10% return on investments or even 8 as being very good returns. And everybody's, you know, up in arms about these hedge funds willing to come in and accept 7%. They don't understand the business and they don't understand how hard it is to rent single family homes. But as we look back to that, and we looked back, you know, even into the 1800s, you know, returns on real estate more in the 5-7% are far more the norm than 8-10. And that actually made me a little bit more bullish, you know, than I was when we showed up in Washington.
Okay. Now, see, I guess when I'm thinking about you mentioned inflation, which I think is a very likely outcome as well. By fixing a payment, you know, if you're talking about a premium today, of your payment versus rent, that's one thing, but you're fixing that payment for 30 years. Your renter next door is not going to have that same rental bill 10 years from now. And so I think that's where the wisdom of the decision kicks in.
The problem with that, though, that I have is that people don't believe, or the average person, let me put it that way, there's certainly people that do, but the average person believes the Fed when they say we're, you know, in for a period of unprecedented low inflation. Inflation's not a problem. Inflation's not a risk. You hear that every day in the news. And, you know, so there's not a perceived risk of inflation to push them to accept a significantly higher payment. And I think at the point where there is that really, truly widespread perceived risk of inflation, it'll be offset by rapidly increasing interest rates. So only a handful of folks that are smart enough to realize that we've got, you know, this belief that there isn't going to be inflation, when in fact, you know, I think that belief is wrong, and these low interest rates, that's a pretty sweet spot to probably, you know, won't exist again for a very long period of time.
I think the, you know, just trying to put on my, I'm not the investor guy. I'm just a normal guy, which I've been many more times than Mr. Investor guy. You know, I sit there and I go, I want to control my own environment. I'll pay a premium for that. Whatever premium it is, and you've touched on this before, is whatever premium the lender will allow me to qualify for.
Yep, absolutely.
Yeah. So it seems like there's still a willingness to own something if a lender will say, okay, we'll loan you the dough. And there, it's an interesting transformation. We went, and you had some charts that really were great, saying that, okay, while prices really progressed, the payment was amazingly consistent because the loan programs became so aggressive, the payment barely didn't move very much, at least for the first time guy.
Yeah, we went from a median price of 250 to 550. And you could have the same payment, you know, if you were a median income earner in California, you could have the same payment at 250 and the same payment at 550, you know, 6 years later. It was unbelievable.
And in a way, you don't have a loan program that's doing that. You have an interest rate that's doing that now. And I guess that's why I think there could be price aggression, because never before has $100,000 price increase meant so little monthly.
But that interest rate has been in place now for some time, and I don't think it's going to go dramatically lower over the next year.
No.
So it's not, there's no impetus for it to dramatically change over the next year.
Interest rates, no. But price, you don't think so, though? See,
I'm just saying easier lending, I don't think, is going to be the driver behind price increases this year. I think the primary driver is going to be the two things you touched on earlier in terms of median price. One is the fact that we're going to have a mix shift to higher-end homes, which doesn't mean prices didn't change at all. It's just the homes that are selling are higher-end because the low-end foreclosures have been going away. And so it's not a change in price. It's a change in median because of the mix of homes being sold. And then I think we have certain areas in the state, and you know, maybe half the state at most, population, just because some of the areas are very populous,
mm-hmm.
where payments are significantly below rents. And I think those areas are going to go up to at least match rents, if not have payments exceed rents as they traditionally have.
One of the things that I noticed, and I looked up loan programs, so I think you're right. We're probably not going to see anytime soon the no-qual stated income variety, but we have a very aggressive FHA program in the sense of its available quantity of money. So in Riverside, it's $500,000. In, let's say, the most expensive counties, I think it's in the ballpark of $700,000. We have a $340,000 median price. The last time on our way up from the 90s, when we got to $340,000, the FHA loan limit was $160,000.
Yeah.
And I think that's a significant change. I don't know that we need the subprime world. We have FHA, and we have FHA probably going to recognize they wrote the safest book of business ever in 2011 and 2012, and they might be allowed to loan to some of these other people that had a foreclosure. And well, we already know they will. And I guess that's where I'm looking at this huge glob of people that could get a loan with a 3.5% down payment and improve their monthly cost, even if it's a premium to rent. I think they make the decision, and we're so far away from that on a monthly basis. You could have price aggression, you know, 20% of 340 is 68 grand, and then you back that off into a monthly cost, and it seems a reasonable number to me. It really does.
Yeah.
I see.
You know, the only thing on the other side of that, right, is FHA right now is under a lot of pressure because of their growing share of the business to tighten their credits, you know, requirements and other things, and to tighten up. Because there's definitely some in Congress that are pretty worried about the loans that they're making, and that, you know, they are creating another bubble. So will they be allowed to this time?
It'll be that's the big question, honestly. You know, when we talk about things that matter, if there was an announcement saying that FHA will now have a loan balance of the median price of California, that would be a big uh-oh to me.
I mean, I understand. I think even this month, right, they're making changes to, you know, if you have a lower credit score, you have to have a lower debt-to-income ratio and some other things along those lines. So larger down payments as if you have a lower credit score and things like that. I think we have some changes coming even later this month on that front.
What's interesting is in the credit world, what's starting to happen, though, is you can improve your credit faster than so whoever's changed the rules there, what used to take 2.5 years now takes 9 months.
Right.
So,
yeah.
Okay, it seems like what's that movie where the guy is behind the curtains making everything happen, The Wizard of Oz? It seems like we're bound and determined that somebody's going to be able to buy a house. And by golly, if it takes too long for their credit to improve, let's improve it quicker.
Right. If we can't change it on one end, let's change it on the other end, wherever there's the political will.
Exactly.
If you help people fix their credit score faster, you know, then you're helping homeowners. And if, on the other hand, you tighten up credit scores on the other side, you're showing prudence. And, great.
Well, prudence doesn't seem to be, you know, the fiscal cliff. The stock market had a big day when we basically completely ignored the fact that we have to at some point cut back. Sean, we're out of time on this segment. Sean O'Toole with foreclosureradar.com, really the best $50 you'll spend in this business. Thanks for joining us, Sean.
You've been listening to the Norris Group Real Estate Radio Show. For more information on the Norris Group, please visit www.thenorrisgroup.com.